Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms to be encouraged, nurtured, and inspired. Also, you'll learn the latest in teen research and trends and get practical parenting tips. You really can improve your relationship with your teen and enjoy the teenage years. Welcome back, everybody. This is Colleen O'Grady, and in this episode, it's the 29th episode, we're going to talk about, are you a worried mom or a reflective mom? It makes all the difference. All right, the truth is that every mom worries. The hard part for moms is to not be worrying all the time, 24/7. I had one mom in my private practice tell me, you know, I feel it's my job to worry 24/7. She said, I kind of feel like if I don't worry about my daughter, then whatever I am worrying about will happen. Like somehow worrying would prevent the bad things from happening. And I actually call this in my book, Dial Down the Drama, one of these powerless parenting messages. There are many that plague moms. But what are these powerless parenting messages? Well, they are implicit messages that we pick up from the culture or we witnessed when we watched our own moms worry. The reason I call this a powerless parenting message is that it feels like it's helpful to you and your daughter, but it actually disempowers you and hurts your relationship with your daughter. And I will be explaining why that is in this episode. Every mom worries. Okay, so what we're after is dialing down the worry, not completely eliminating it. There are times that worry can really be helpful. However, a worried mom lives in a state of worry. Their actions are fueled on worry. We want to replace the worry energy with a more reflective energy. All moms worry in some ways. We are biologically wired to worry, but not all moms are reflective. Reflection is essential for you to be a happy, thriving, I love my life mom. Worry is going to produce a drained, anxious, and resentful mom. In this episode, I'm going to contrast worry with reflection and show you why worry is a hindrance to parenting and reflection is the key to enjoying the teenage years. Reflection is a starting point which can lead to intentional parenting. Intentional parenting is what we are after. Without it, we are left with just being kind of a crazy reactive parent. Now, I am no stranger to worry. My mom was a worrier, my sister is a worrier, and I have that trait for sure. Now, there is no shortage of issues to worry about when you are parenting teens. We hear them all on the news. Substance abuse, car accidents, sabotaging their future, getting pregnant, STDs, failing school, date rape, and the list goes on. Basically, at the heart of worry is, will my teen be okay and will they turn out okay? As a licensed family therapist who consulted in outpatient psychiatry clinics for child and adolescent department of medical schools and who consulted on adolescent units in a county hospital, I have seen every parent's worst nightmare. Or another way to say it is that I've seen every parent's worst worry that actually has come true. And this was definitely not helpful when I was raising my own daughter. Those heartbreaking cases I observed are well ingrained in my brain. My daughter used to say that I had the worst profession for raising teens because it just amped up my already prone to worry personality to a full throttle worry. And that drove my daughter nuts. Okay, back to worry. Spoiler alert, and I will get to this later, But most of the time, worry is not accurate. It's actually just not even true because most of it is made up and imagined in the future. But why it really is super confusing is that when you are in a place of worry, it feels absolutely true, like it's really going to happen. And I can't tell you that none of your worries will come true. But I can tell you that a majority of the times our worries won't. And the big issue really is, what are we going to do with our worries? If we can never get our worries out of a state of worry and move them into more of a reflective state, we really can't protect our daughters from those worries. Okay, I am now going to tell on myself. I've been a licensed therapist for maybe 16 years or so when my daughter was a freshman in high school. And up to this time, I always picked her up from school. And to be honest, I love that because I love to see her after school and connect with her, and I knew that she was safe. One day, she called me from school and asked if she could go home with her new friend, Amy, and then I could pick her up from her house. And I thought that was completely fine because I had taken Erin to Amy's house before, and she didn't live very far from my house. Now, it was after school, and then I realized that I didn't have Amy's address. So I started texting my daughter, and she didn't reply. I started calling her, and she didn't answer. And this went on for over 2 hours. Now my mild concern went to worry, then to full-blown panic. I couldn't hold back all those bad memories, all those experiences, all the things that I saw at the county hospital, and then my imagination went into a 5-alarm fire. And I don't know exactly everything that I worried about, but I tormented myself with thoughts like, she's going to be dead on the side of the road. She's going to be gang raped. So 2.5 hours later, my daughter finally called me back and said one word, what? Okay, so I bet every mom listening knows that this conversation did not end well. I was so in the stress response of fight, flight, freeze. Actually, I was in fight. So I said in a very angry tone, why did you not return my call? And then she said, well, my phone died. Okay, so any moms out there have ever heard that excuse, I didn't call you back because my phone died? So that does not satisfy a mother very much. And then she said, why are you freaking out? Okay, so that comment really made me mad and for sure did not help me relax. So I went into a full-fledged fight response and I went full-blown mom lecture on her. And she said, Mom, I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was just making cookies with Amy's mom. And she actually was. Now, of all the torturous pictures that went through my mind, making cookies with Amy's mom was not one of them. I had completely overreacted. So let's look at the definitions of worry and reflection. Okay, one definition of worry is to torment oneself with or suffer from disturbing thoughts, fret. That sounds about right, doesn't it? To torment with cares, anxieties, trouble, plague, a worried condition or feeling, uneasiness or anxiety. All right, let's now go to what's the definition of reflection. A fixing of the thoughts on something, careful consideration, a thought occurring in consideration or meditation, an unfavorable remark or observation, a thought, idea, or opinion formed or a remark made as a result of meditation, consideration of some subject matter, idea, or purpose. So we can simplify this. Worry are thoughts that torment us, and reflective thoughts don't. We consider them. So are there any similarities between worry and reflection? Actually, there are. Reflection and worry are both thoughts that go back in the past and then anticipate the future. Worry and reflection both acknowledge the negative, but those are the only ways that they're similar. Okay, so now let's compare the two. How are worry and reflection different? Well, number one, worry and reflection impact our body differently. Let's look at worry. You never can worry yourself to calm. So what do I mean? You know the saying, don't worry yourself to death? Well, it may not lead to death, but worry is progressive. It spreads like a wildfire. Little sporadic worries intensify and can become consistent worries that turn into full-blown anxiety. Listen to how worry affects your body. This comes from the book, The Practical Neuroscience of Buddha's Brain by Rick Hansen and Richard Mendias. So when our worry amps up into anxiety, here's what happens. Within a second or two of the initial alarm, your brain is on red alert. Your sympathetic nervous system is lit up like a Christmas tree and stress hormones are washing through your blood. In other words, you're at least a little upset. What's going on in your body? Epinephrine increases your heart rate, so your heart can't move more blood, and dilates your pupils, so your eyes gather more light. Norepinephrine shunts blood to large muscle groups. Meanwhile, the bronchioles of your lung dilate for increased gas exchange, enabling you to hit harder or run faster. Cortisol suppresses the immune system to reduce inflammation from wounds. It also revs up stress reactions in two circular ways. First, it causes the brainstem to stimulate the amygdala further, which increases amygdala activation of the SNS and HPAA system, which produces more cortisol. Second, cortisol suppresses hippocampal activity, which normally inhibits the amygdala. This takes the brakes off the amygdala, leading to yet more cortisol. Reproduction is sidelined. No time for sex when you're running for cover. The same for digestion. Salivation decreases and peristalsis slows down, so your mouth feels very dry and you become constipated. Your emotions intensify, organizing and mobilizing the whole brain for action. SNS and HPAA arousal stimulates the amygdala, which is hardwired to focus on negative information and react intensely to it. Consequently, feeling stress sets you up for fear and anger. As limbic and endocrine activation increases, the relative strength of executive control from the prefrontal cortex declines. It's like being in a car with a runaway accelerator. The driver has less control over her vehicle. Further, the prefrontal cortex is also affected by the SNS-HPAA arousal, which pushes appraisals, attributions of others' intentions and priorities in a negative direction. Now the driver of the careening car thinks everyone else is an idiot. For example, consider the difference between your take on a situation when you're upset and your thoughts about it later when you're calmer. Okay then, as you can see, this does not lead to enjoying your life or enjoying your daughter. On the other hand, reflection comes from a calm place. It's when the parasympathetic nervous system has been activated. You're not in the stress response. The amygdala in your lower brain has not set off that sympathetic nervous system, and the hypothalamus is not filling your body with all that adrenaline and cortisol. Your whole brain and body are calm and are working together. I often say that when you are emotionally flooded with anxiety, it's like a computer that goes offline. You might have the word processor, but you've lost access to the internet. When you are worried, you are offline from the higher brain, the prefrontal cortex, and the right and left hemisphere of the cortex, and that's everything that you need to actually solve a problem. But when you are in a state of calm, you are online with that internet, you have that wealth of information, and you start to see situations more accurately and clearly. This is a place that you can truly be reflective. All right, two. You get triggered into worry, but you have to choose to be reflective. Worry can happen fast, really fast. Scientists say that thoughts in our lower brain are 500 times faster than in the cortex. So often worry happens when we get triggered. Triggers are like when she doesn't come home on time, or you see her online grades and that she has 3 zeros or missing grades. You find an empty bottle of vodka in his room. It's not like you say to yourself, this would be a great time to worry. It happens automatically. The body and thoughts quickly react to that trigger. And once this starts, it's hard to turn the worry off. It seems to just keep going. And then it expands to new areas to worry about. And then your brain just opens up every single file of every possible thing that you can worry about. And it's overwhelming. And then you start building a case in your head why all these worries are true and valid. When your partner says, why are you so upset? So here's the big problem, is that in reality, these thoughts are just cycling around your head and they're often very repetitive, like, oh no, she can fail out of school. Oh no, what if she failed out of school? Oh my gosh, she may fail out of school. Where will she be in 10 years if she failed out of school? So it's very, very repetitive. And on it goes. And so when you are in this state, you obviously are never going to find comfort. And you will not find any grounded strategies. But just more often, you're going to just have these more impulsive reactions. You don't have access to all the information, all that good stuff, the positive information about what your teen is doing well, all the positive things that the teachers have said. Now, or the time that your son built a computer from scratch, you're missing perspective, facts, and grounded logic. You're not going to get any body prompts to be reflective. You have to choose that on your own. And that's hard because in this busy mom culture, it feels like reflection is optional, like something that you do when you get through your entire list and everyone's happy and you've organized all your closets and you are absolutely bored. But reflection can be one of the most important things that you do for yourself, for your family, and for your children. All right, number 3, reflection can handle the negativity and do something positive with it, and is 99% more accurate. So what do I mean that reflection can handle negativity? Well, how worry and reflection handle the negative is very different. Worry jumps completely in it and gets submerged in it and keeps swimming in it. So what do I mean by it? Oh, so I'm going to tell you a story about my sister. When my sister was maybe 11 or 12, we went down to a park called Memorial Park in Houston, and there was this buffalo bayou that goes through the park. And my sister said, ask my dad if she could jump into the bayou. And my dad said, well, there's sewage, poisonous snakes, and lots of diseases in that water, but you make a decision. You make your own good judgment about it. And my daughter took a rope swing and jumped right into the middle of all of it. So worry is kind of like that. We are in the sewage. Now, reflection stands on the shore and it's looking at the bayou. It's observing it and takes in the facts, but it just doesn't jump into it. Reflection has a better viewing point and has a better perspective. The bayou is like the lower brain. It can be filled with sewage. That's where that stress response is. And that reflection is like standing on the shore. That is the higher brain, where it's able to reflect from a little bit of a distance, observe what's going on from multi perspectives. Reflection considers the negative, but it also considers the positive, the silver lining. Reflection includes the bird's eye view and beyond. It can see things from a spiritual perspective. Okay, number 4, how worry and reflection are different. Well, reflection is 99% more accurate. Reflection is more patient with collecting data and looking at multiple perspectives. Worry is so impatient and screams out every worst-case scenario. It pushes everything to the extreme. She's not smart enough. She's not going to make it. She's not going to be happy. There's something wrong with her. In reality, worry is missing crucial and vital information. Worry is not accurate. It's generic. It's not grounded in the whole truth. Worry has no solutions, no way to solve the problem. And thus, that's why worry is a breeding ground for anxiety. And again, the tricky thing about anxiety is that it feels 100% true. Now, reflection calmly asks, is this true? And how likely will that happen? Often, it's not very, very likely that it would happen. So reflection considers the whole movie of your daughter, and not just that snapshot of the one failed grade. It remembers when your daughter sat with your grandmother in the hospital and was there for you in that hard time. And yes, you caught her smoking weed, but in reality, she tried it once, and you had a conversation about it. She's not addicted to drugs. She may not plan well and crams the night before, but you see that it's partly because of her developing brain and that you can help her observe how she can do that differently next time. Then that's actually normal adolescent behavior. Reflection can talk you off the cliff. It can also help you see yourself objectively, where maybe you weren't helpful, maybe how you escalated that situation, and how you might have unknowingly made things worse when you were trying to get her to study. It's so important for us to look at our part, to say, I'm sorry, even if we're only 1% responsible for that negative interaction. Reflection can help you see that he is just a normal teenager, and you can start asking questions like, where does he need guidance to be a healthy adult? What consequence will help him get there? Does he need more help and support? Reflection allows for insights and ahas. It digs deep. It evaluates mindsets in your mindset and hidden beliefs that blind you from really seeing your daughter. It also helps you become aware of patterns that happen between you and your daughter and everyone in your family. And a good place to look for those patterns are in the morning or in the evening. So often we get caught in these little power struggles in the morning or evening around getting up or getting your homework done. All these observations and considerations and reflections not only calm down the worry, but they lead you to practical solution. What needs to be done here? Does she need an organizational coach? What would be the appropriate consequence to her being careless with her phone? What are the guidelines with the car? Where do you, as a mom, need more information? Where do you need more support? Where have you and your daughter gotten off track? You think that she exercises, but then you realize that she has not exercised since soccer stopped about a month ago. She's not getting any exercise. And though you think that you, mom, get plenty of exercise, then when you think about it, you really haven't been able to do your normal routine for the past month because of all the extra demands from your husband. You think, maybe that's why I've been so irritable. Now this, if you're reflective, doesn't lead to shame or mom bashing. It leads you to a practical solution like, you know what? I need to exercise. I need to take care of myself. So it's a win-win for you and your family. So reflection accurately names what you need and what needs to get back in your schedule and what you are missing to really enjoy your life. All right, so another difference between worry and reflection. Number 5, how do worry and reflection feel? Well, worry leaves you feeling anxious and unsettled. It's the unwanted guest when you lay your head on that pillow. It robs you of sleep, of satisfaction, of joy. It robs you of feeling like you are doing a good job as a mom. Reflection calms the worry. And even though you see things about yourself that you may not like, and you are addressing behavior in your teen that concerns you, you still feel hopeful. You realize that you got off track, but that means it's possible to get back on track. Because you are more accurate about your concerns, you create a strategy, you make an intention, you make a plan, you get help, and you experience a relief and a knowing that things are going to get better. Number 6, therefore, worry and reflection takes you to completely different destinations. Reflection leads to hopeful change, and worry leads to that downward cycle of despair and stress. Reflection is the first step to accomplishing your goals, reaching your dreams, and creating effective change for both you and your daughter. All right, so what does this have to do with moms and teens? Moms will worry, but you don't want worry dominating your parenting. You don't want to earn the title of the worried mom. It impairs your parenting because you are not seeing accurately. It blinds you from your daughter's strengths, abilities, and potentials. It causes you to overreact to your daughter. It throws you into the stress response of fight, flight, and freeze. That causes most of your interactions with your daughter to be strained and tense. This leads to damaging your connection with your daughter. She will either build a wall to shut you out or come at you with the fight response. Your worry will trigger your daughter's worry, and that will trigger her stress response, and that leads to lots and lots of drama. Your daughter will hide information from you because you, quote, overreact. And then when she hides from you, it's going to make you panic more. All this worry makes you hate the teenage years, and you end up counting the days before he or she leaves home. Yet, that's not what you really want. You're sad that your teen is not talking to you. This is not what you wanted. All this worry makes you not feel like yourself. You're tired of worrying every time she goes out. Will he get arrested? Is he okay? Is he drinking? You're just so exhausted and drained from all these worries. You used to like to laugh and be fun, but you can't remember the last time you did. You feel tired, and if you're honest, you're angry at your daughter or son for making you feel this way. You look at the other moms and you think they must all have it together, and so you worry about that there's something wrong with you and that you're failing at this mother job. Reflection helps you feel way more optimistic. You remember that you are a good mom. You don't have to be a perfect mom. You remember that you really do like your son or daughter. You like that they make you laugh and that they bring joy and energy and spunk back into your life. They help you get out of your routine box. And they can help you remember when you used to get so excited about that concert or meeting someone new. Reflection helps you be a better parent. You're kind to yourself when you get triggered. You take really good care of yourself. You talk to trusted friends. You go for a walk. You allow yourself to calm down and then take time to reflect on that situation. So what's really going on? You don't let worry control you. You control worry. You ask, is this really true? Will one failing grade really ruin his future? You ask, what does my child need to be a successful adult? You give yourself the time to be clear and get your partner on board. You strategize how to stay connected to your teen. And then you find the best time for both of you to have the hard talk. You're aware of where you may get triggered. You use intention. You're clear before you have that conversation. Reflection helps you dial down the drama, but it also helps you dial up the joy, the fun, and the playfulness in your relationship. Here's an example. You spend some time journaling and you realize that at dinner time that everyone is on their phone. So you and your partner get an agreement and you decide that there will be a phone-free meal. You don't use that time to grill the kids about their schoolwork. You intend to have time to be present and just to enjoy your kids. Your teens will pick up on that quickly, that they're not being hammered with questions, so they let down their guard and you end up having fun dinners together. I want to challenge you to become a reflective mom. Start with taking 15 minutes each week and reflecting on your week. And I know some of you need help, and I would love to help you. I have a wonderful program. It's called Power Your Parenting, How to Reconnect with Your Teenager and Reclaim Your Life. And really, a huge part of it is helping you reflect on every single aspect of your life and parenting. It's a 7-week program, and you get daily lessons delivered to your email, and it takes about 10 minutes to read, but it won't overwhelm you. It's there to help you reflect on one aspect of your life and parenting. And it's not just an online program. You get access to me with your Ask Me Anything group calls with other like-minded moms. And if you want to find more about that program, you can go to joinpyp.com or just email me at colleen@dialdownthedrama.com. But please reach out. I don't want to leave you feeling like a worried mom. I want you to enjoy these years, and you really can be a reflective mom. And if you need help, get help, and I'm here to help you. Hey, everybody. This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. I have some other great resources for you. You can head over to ColleenO'Grady.com. That has two L's and two E's. You can sign up for my Dial Down the Drama triple pack. It's absolutely free. You get a copy of my free ebook, 7 Ways to Help Your Daughter and Yourself, a free chapter from my best-selling and award-winning book, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict and Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, a guide for mothers everywhere. And you get a free subscription to my weekly e-zine. I always have a helpful article for you. If you're ready to pick up your copy of Dial Down the Drama, you can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For daily encouragement, follow me on Instagram or Facebook at Colleen O'Grady, Dial Down the Drama.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.